Psalm 59, the title of which tells us that it was to the chief musician, Al-Tashith, means that they were to sing it to a certain tune, Michtam of David, when Saul sent and they watched the house to kill him. Deliver me from mine enemies, my God. Defend me from them that rise up against me. Verse 3. For lo, they lie in wait for my soul. Verse 6. They return at evening. They make a noise like a dog go round about the city. Verse 13, middle of the verse. Let them know unto the ends of the earth that God ruleth in Jacob. Selah. And at evening, let them return. And let them make a noise like a dog and go round about the city. Let them wander up and down for meat and grudge if they be not satisfied. But I will sing of thy power. Yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning, for thou hast been my defence and refuge in the day of my trouble. Of the 73 psalms which are associated with the name of David, there are 13 where the titles refer us to some specific incident or circumstance or time in David's life. This, of course, is one of them, and the heading of this particular psalm enables us to locate precisely that time in David's life when he composed it. We can pinpoint the exact moment when David composed the psalm. And I want tonight to put these words that we've read into their proper context by now referring back to the chapter of 1 Samuel, it's chapter 19, which provides us with the background to that psalm. So if you could turn back now, please, to the first book of Samuel and chapter 19. Verse 1. And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. Verse 10. And Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with the spear. Verse 11. Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And finally, verse 20, and Saul sent messengers to take David. That's all we purpose reading tonight from the scriptures. And my text for this evening from Psalm 59, verse 13. Let them know to the ends of the earth that God ruleth. And to enable us to appreciate a little of the significance of those words for David at the time, I want to trace two threads through 1 Samuel chapter 19. I want to have two quite brief looks at the chapter and to see that through the chapter there run these two threads. And the first thread I want to label the green thread. Why, I hope, will be clear in just a moment. Because the one thing that comes out of 1 Samuel 19 that you can hardly miss is that the then King Saul was held firmly in the grip of envy. He made, as we read, at least four separate attempts on the life of David. You notice the words, verse 1, kill David. Verse 10, smite David. Verse 11, slay him in the morning. And finally, he sent messengers to take David. And there are, in the chapter, at least these four attempts on David's life, and it raises the question. What prompted Saul? What motivated him to such actions? Now, I concede at the beginning that you won't find the word envy in the chapter. But although the word itself isn't mentioned, there can be no doubt whatever that it was envy, resentment, fear even, on the part of Saul that was responsible for his actions. It was envy that filled his sails and drove him on and on, as we'll see, and it was extremely sad. If for no other reason than in his earlier days, Saul had been such a promising monarch, completely free from any feelings of envy or jealousy or rivalry or self-seeking or ambition. You may remember back in chapter 10, when Samuel had identified Saul. He'd known who the king was before, but he'd now identified by name, in the sight of all Israel, who their future king was to be, that they had sought to be like the nations around them. And when they sought for him, they could not find him, the scripture says. And they inquired of the Lord again, and the Lord said, he's hidden himself among the stuff, again, among the baggage. The man was a quiet, unassuming man. And respect is paid to that in chapter 15. In verse 17, when Samuel is remonstrating with Saul because he spared Agag and the best of Amalek, he says on behalf of the Lord, verse 17, when thou wast little in thine own eyes, I made thee head over the tribes of Israel, and I anointed thee king of Israel. No time was when Saul was little in his own eyes. No problems then for Saul, but now. Now he is held firmly in the grip and grasp of what one of the great English playwrights, Shakespeare, called the green-eyed monster. Envy has him in its grip, and he is beaten. And he has become, when you come into the beginning of chapter 19, an extremely desperate man. The grip of envy is tightening. Time was, back in chapter 18, when Saul, although he wanted David out of the way, although he wanted to dispense with David, was very careful how that was to be achieved. Apart from the occasions when the evil spirit possessed him, he was willing only to see David die by the sword of the Philistines. He wanted at all costs to keep his hands clean. There must be no suspicion that Saul is in any way involved in David's death, and he takes a whole host of steps to secure that. Let not my hand be upon him, he says in verse 17. Let the hand of the Philistines be upon him. And in verse 21, that the hand of the Philistines might be against him. And in verse 25, he thought to make him fall by the hand of the Philistines. And there he is, pulling the strings and engineering and orchestrating everything to see that when David falls, it is by the hand of the Philistines. But all his cunning plots and subtle methods failed, and he is a frustrated man at the end of the chapter. And that's why when you come into the beginning of the chapter, which we read, he's now prepared to stoop and incriminate and involve even Jonathan, his son, and his chief officials, verse 1 of chapter 19. Indeed, as we've read, during the course of this chapter, he reaches the point where he will do it himself. He is prepared to, and gladly, he is prepared to kill David in cold blood. As he says in verse 15, bring him to me in the bed, that I may slay him. With all his previous attempts frustrated, Saul becomes a ruthless, merciless man, prepared to slaughter in cold blood somebody that he's been led to believe is at that moment a helpless invalid. The man is seriously sick, but Saul would have sunk a knife in him and rid himself forever of his rival, of his competitor, as Saul judged things. How true that word that you find in the Song of Songs, chapter 8 and verse 6. Jealousy is as cruel, it's as hard, it's as unyielding as the grave. jealousy. But that takes us really to another question. Where was that monster born? Where did this envy of soul begin? Well, it all began with a song. Back in chapter 18 and verse 7, the women of Israel came out and they sang one to another a great song of victory. Saul has slain his thousands. David, his 10,000s. I suppose they were justified in describing Goliath as if he were worth 10,000 Philistines. Undoubtedly he was. But we must seriously question the wisdom and the sense of these ladies of Israel who sang in those terms. Far better if they'd stood with Moses in Exodus chapter 15 and ascribed the credit and the praise to God. I will sing unto the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. Or if they'd stood with Deborah and Barak in Judges chapter 5, praise ye the Lord for the avenging of Israel. Oh, that they had ascribed the glory to God and not attributed so much to the instruments. Far safer and far, far better and God-honoring, but unfortunately no, and it's a pity. A pity they sang it, and a pity that Saul heard it, and it was inevitable that he would. It was the song that they greeted the conquering heroes with. They came out to meet Saul. That's the song they sang in his ears. And it became an extremely popular song. Whether the tune to which they set it caught on, I don't know, but it went straight to the top of the charts. Everybody was singing this song now. You couldn't even go down into the cities of the Philistines without hearing it. When David in chapter 21 took refuge with Achish, king of Gath, his servants, his chief officials object. Is not this David, the king of the land? That's an interesting title, of course, because Saul was still around. But in the Philistine eyes, the man who put Goliath on the ground was effectively the king. Is not this David, the king of the land? Is not he, of whom they sang in their dances, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s? Chapter 29, verse 5, just before that fateful battle of Gilboa, David again with the Philistines. But this time it's the Philistine princes or lords who will not have David go down to battle with him, with them. They don't trust him. Is not this, they say, David, of whom they sang in their dances, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. They never forgot the words of this song. And neither did Saul. Jonathan points out to Saul in chapter 19 and verse 5 that at the time of that loud metallic crash when Goliath hit the ground, you saw it and rejoiced. I heard you, Jonathan saying. You cheered louder than anybody else. Ah, but things have changed. The song has changed all that. And Saul's attitude to David has now become soured. Because this song has alerted Saul to the fact that in the eyes of his people, he has been eclipsed by this 20-year-old son of Jesse from Bethlehem. He's now second fiddle. David has taken over in their hearts. And it sowed a seed, that song did. He was, as verse 8 of chapter 18 tells us, very angry. And from that moment on, he eyed David. He eyed him with suspicion and distrust. They were ascribed to David 10,000. To me, but thousands. What more can he have but the kingdom? The kingdom. Of which Samuel had said to him in chapter 15, verse 28, the Lord has rent the kingdom from thee and given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. Today Saul knew who that neighbor was. And from that moment on, he hated him and he envied him.
If it wasn't for that, I don't suppose he would have reacted to David's success at the end of chapter 18 in verse 30, as he did at the beginning of chapter 19 that we read. He never would have encouraged Jonathan and his servants to slay David. But Saul is very worried. He is apprehensive and nervous. Throughout chapter 18, there is the refrain of Saul's fear of David. Verse 12. Saul was afraid of David. Verse 15. He was afraid of David. Different word, incidentally. He stood in awe of David. Verse 29. He was yet the more afraid of David. David's not afraid of Saul in chapter 18. It's Saul who is afraid of David. Now, if you go through the pretense that his enemies are the Philistines, verse 25, he will talk about being avenged of my enemies. It's all a facade. It's all a veneer. The man's play-acting. He's only got one enemy now, as far as he is concerned. And in my chapter 19 and verse 17, he says to his daughter Michal, "Why have you deceived me and sent my enemy away? You sent away my enemy." And it was all out. In that unguarded moment, he said it, and that was the truth. From this moment on, Saul has one enemy, and it's not the king of Gath. It's David. Or as verse 29 of chapter 18 says, he became David's enemy continually. As far as Saul was concerned, he was on a war footing, not with the Philistines now, but with the young man from Bethlehem. Later on in this book, in chapter 26, down in the camp of Saul, Abishai, who was pretty good with a spear and wouldn't need to have hit Saul twice if David would have let him, Abishai turned to David and he said that the Lord has delivered into your hand your enemy today. In chapter 24, they were in a cave. And David's men had said, when Saul was at his mercy, that this is the day of which the Lord said to you, "I will deliver your enemy into your hand." David will have none of that. David will not think or speak of Saul in terms of being an enemy. He's anything but an enemy. And in chapter 24, verse 6, he calls him my master. Verse 11, my father.